Hello, all you diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. We're going to take you back to our sojourn in Spain with some more places we visited.
Yeah,
good morning, Peter.
Yeah, we're still in Valencia, or at least
we wish we were still in Valencia.
but here we are back in Pittsburgh. All we can do is remember what a wonderful time we had. And this week's program...
It was nice and warm and sunny.
If last week's program was filled with modern cuisine of Valencia, this week's program is a more traditional side of the Valencia dining scene.
Yeah, not totally, though, because we did go to...
Well, not completely. But certainly more so than...
We're going to start out with the more traditional.
More so than the innovative people that we talked to last week. But a place... If there's a place in Valencia that you must go to get a feel for the city...
Everyone says
it's Casa Montaña, which wasn't even a restaurant until a few days ago.
A few years ago.
When instead of retiring, the owner decided that something that had been a side effort of a wine bar should be a full-time operation, and they would do more with wine and more with food. And so right in the shadow of the harbor of Valencia on an old side street is the wonderful Casa Montaña, and here we are.
We are having a wonderful time. Casa Montaña is an institution. It's just so wonderful, but it's also a very lively place. We're going to actually talk to Alejandro Garcia, who is the son of the owner, who also is the general manager, and he's been around this business since he was born, but very active in this particular location, as his family has been for the past 15 years. Very nice to meet you, and thank you for welcoming us.
Oh, thank you. It's
with
very
a little
nice.
Jamon, which is what I needed.
It's very nice to meet you. So.
So now, what part of the city are we in the Casa Montaña?
Okay, yeah, we are set in Cabañal neighborhood, and this neighborhood is like very close to the sea. It's like 200, 300 meters from the sea.
Does it mean anything? The name of the district.
Well, yeah, it does. It means like this Cabañales, it was because the kind of houses they used to build here, they were cabañas, and cabañas were made by wood, and they were like very special and very typical from this kind of neighborhoods, not in Valencia, but in many places also.
Okay, so before we made the last turn to come onto your street, the building that we saw ahead is the main embarkation point of the port of Valencia?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. It is.
Mm. Now, how old is this? You talk about 19th century. I'm even more ancient than that.
Yeah, actually, this place was founded in 1836, and it was like a neighborhood place. It was not so big as it is now. And it was here because the people, the fishermen and the people who used to work here in the sea, close to the sea, they used to come here to buy things that they need, like wine, vinegar, oil, just for their houses, or maybe just for their travels, because they used to stop here in Valencia and make business, and maybe buy some wine and some things to continue the travel.
But, I mean, what you're really most famous for is your wine collection.
Yeah.
You showed us around. The building is fascinating. You carved things out of the walls to store your wines. I read where you have over 1,000 different variety labels.
Yeah, in the beginning we used to have just wine by liters, and it was not a very good wine, but I mean the it was different on that time. But when we came on 1994, like 15 years ago, we tried to take care a little bit of the wine, and also because my father was born in a wine region.
Where was he born?
In Requena. Requena is Utiel. Requena is like one of the biggest places here in Valencia.
Yeah, okay. We are going to that region on Monday.
Okay, yeah,
to visit the winery.
We'll like it. So he grew up with wine. So he decided, when we came here, we decided to make like a big wine project. And we started by having like 200, 300 different wines. And at the end, we ended with over 1,000 different wines from all over Spain.
Not just are they only Spanish? Or do you
well, care? We are trying to have a little bit of everywhere. Most of them are from Spain, but we have wine from also every producer country.
Really?
And now we are trying to put a little bit more care and love with the Valencian, to okay. the Valencian wines.
Now that's what we're drinking here. Tell us about this one.
Yeah, this wine is from Utiel Requena, from the place I told you. And it's one of these cellars that appeared like 5-6 years ago. And they didn't do like a real good wine in the beginning, but now this wine, you can compare it with the Rioja or with some other wines. And now you can find like many cellars like this in Valencia, like many young people is making good, really good wines. And I mean, I hope you like it.
Yeah, I do. No, you started at some point serving food. It used to be where the family ate who founded this, but then you started opening it to diners.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in the beginning, when the people used to come here and buy the wine, because they had to wait a little bit, the first owner started to put just like a little tapa, like an anchovy or something like this, just for the waiting time. And then
following... That's what I'm doing. I'm having jamón while we're interviewing.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like that. Remember the lady we interviewed in South Carolina? They made that shrimp dip, and they gave it to people whose tables who were waiting for their table because their table was late.
Yeah.
And then the following owners, they introduced like one more thing, and at the end when we arrived here in the 1994, we found that the people was also known because of. It's tapas, and we used to have like 10 different tapas, and at the time we decided to put more wines in our list. We decided to have a good chef and try to add like more different tapas.
So but you do have a strictly tapas menu.
Yeah, everything we have is like tapas, but what we do, we try to do is like to get the best product. We go all around Spain. I mean, we go to the north and also to the south, trying to find the best products. And once we find them, we just put like care on it, and we do it everything in the moment. So that's the only thing we do. I mean, we don't make like very strange tapas. They are like traditional tapas.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So the chef was very interested. He just came and put his head around the door.
Yeah.
I don't know if he wanted to talk to you or whether he was just curious about what was going on.
Yeah, I think he was curious because
is his name? We can put that out there.
His name is Raul.
Raul.
Raul. He comes from Madrid. Uh-huh. And in the beginning, like he's now is the fourth year that he's here. He used to be very shy. But now he's a little bit used to speak to the people, also to the customers, but also to several media people.
Well, it seems everybody seems happy to be here. Who comes here exactly?
Okay, yeah. I mean, you mean to work? No, you mean...
The diners. The drinkers, or whatever we call them.
Is
there a name for people who go around doing tapas?
No, there is not a special name, but... What one of the beautiful things of this place for me is that everybody comes. You can find like a celebrity, but you can find also the neighbor of the building besides.
I was reading. It was like I was a little worried that it was going to be all stuffy because it talked about all these business people coming.
Yeah, it's like sometimes
it's not stuffy.
No, not stuffy. No, well.
Listeners, I want to point out, by the way, that Alejandro was lengthily trained, in two different specialties as an engineer. And after doing that tediously in England for a while, he decided to come back to where he was from, pick up his the interesting projects that his father had in the works. And you said it's the weather's better, obviously, but it's also more romantic.
Yeah.
And this place is romantic.
Yeah, that's what I say. Yeah, that this place is really romantic because I like restaurants and hostelry, but it was because of this place and my father's project that I decided to at the end to come because of the romantic thing that you can feel here.
Now, do you have a website people could read about this?
Yeah, we have a website. Now we are trying to make like a second website to just more dedicated to the wines and to sell wine online. But by the moment we have like a website.
Which is
emilianobodega.com.
That's an email here. It's www.emilianobodega.com.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
And we'll have this listed on our website in case anybody didn't pick up the spelling of it.
Okay.
I have a question before we sign off.
Yeah.
You said that the wines of this region are developing and getting much better.
That's right. Yeah.
What's the principal grape variety here?
The principal grape. Well, here we have like many kinds of grapes, but the interesting thing about this area is the one grape called Bobal. This is like a local grape that you can only find here. And almost every wine from this region, they have like the typical grapes like Tempranillo, Cabernet, but they also put like 20-30% of this special grape that only grows.
Okay, sort of like a mystery grape.
Yeah, it's like a mystery. I mean, because here we have made wine for many years, but they were very careful with the wine, and for the 10 last years they have started to take a little bit care of the wine and to recuperate, take back, to bring back this grape that it was a little bit lost.
An ancient grape.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now the same thing happened a few years ago with a different region. It starts with a P. Priorat.
Priorato, yeah, that's
Priorato.
Right.
Priorato. So in a sense, this region is following that example.
Yeah.
And saying we can indeed make a noble wine.
Exactly.
And what we have to do is we have to care about doing that, and it's worth the trouble.
Yeah.
What's the difference between that and Primitivo?
Well, Primitivo is a, first of all, it's a style of wine from Italy.
Yes.
And it's a style. It's a kind of grape. Priorat is a region.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Like Penedès is a region, like the region here. Repeat the name of the region again.
Utiel-Requena.
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 You said something. You called the grape something.
Bobal.
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 Yeah,
Bobal.
You said something about it as being old, right?
Yeah. It's like very old and. What every region here, not Utiel-Requena, but every region in Spain, they have tried to be different to the other regions. So every one of them have tried to bring back their own grapes, those grapes that maybe they were like forgotten, but which make the difference.
Yeah, it's happened. It's happened in other parts of the world as well.
Yeah,
it's happened.
Right.
It's happened in Italy, in various regions of Italy, even Châteauneuf-du-Pape in southern Rhone. There are some grapes that are included in Châteauneuf-du-Pape that only grow in that region. The difference is caring about the viticulture.
Well, anyhow, our listeners definitely should come here, and I would highly recommend it. I might say. One thing is, it's what time is it now? We came early. It's about 9 o'clock.
Yeah, now it's around 9 o'clock. People usually start to come around 9:30, 10 o'clock, because you know here people have dinner like very late.
I know. How do they get up and work the next day?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't get up and work the next day, right?
No, because, yeah, I work the next day, but a little bit later than normal people, because we finish really late every night, like 2 o'clock in the morning or so.
Yeah, so listeners, you won't hear any background noise, but that's only because the door of the room we're in is closed.
and besides,
the people didn't come here. But we're in a very interesting room. Just a final note: we're actually in the wine tasting room.
That's
right. There's something special about it that I haven't seen before. Tell us about the white tabletop and the special lighting.
When in 1994, when we started to take care a little bit about wine, we decided that we need a wine tasting room because many people knew that Casa Montaña was a wine place in Valencia and they were interested to learn a little bit more. And also the wine producer used to come here to show their wines. So we came here to this room and we tried to fit it for a wine tasting room. So we put this white table here just to check the visual part of the wine and also these big lights that maybe they are not the most beautiful ones, but they are good to
but they're, taste but they're wines. Here, but they're here for a purpose.
Yeah, they are so, for that purpose.
So we have white background, which you can use to see the density and the true color of the wine.
The color, yeah.
And then light from above as well. It's a great idea. Listeners, if you're into wine, if you're into Spain, if you're into a beautiful city called Valencia, this would be a good wine region to explore. You can tell all your friends you came here and they should come too, because you might be the first. But the first stop you make, it's got to be at Casa Montaña.
Yeah.
We're actually going to the wine region later in our stay, but we're going to go better educated because Alejandro is going to help us to explain what to look for in the wines of this region. Yeah. Alejandro, thank you so much for joining us on the menu.
Thanks, Alejandro.
Thank you very much.
Muchas gracias.
Gracias. De nada.
Well, I must say that this is a great place to start because you can't help but just bask in the charm of Valencia in this place. And weren't our hosts just wonderful? Hmm?
Yeah, it's a place with character, I think,
character.
The way you describe it. And we had a fascinating conversation with some local guests who go there all the time in our broken Spanish, well, at least my broken Spanish, and Anne's not quite so fractured Spanish. And it's clear that everyone loves this place. So reservations are highly recommended, even though you would say
it's a casual,
hole-in-the-wall casual place wouldn't need that. Everybody in Valencia, it turns out, knows about it, so everybody goes there, and you should too. And, of course, tell them on the menu sent you when you go.
And now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. I must say, truly, that we didn't just eat. We did a lot of other things. When you stay near the old town, you can walk to Spinning Place, and there are all kinds of fabulous smart shops. We didn't buy anything because the exchange rate was so pathetic between the dollar and the euro. But then we went to the Science Center, we went to the aquarium, and we went to some art museums. None of the art museums were I think that whole scene is going to get much better. It's very big on theater. It's very big on music. There's lots to do in Valencia.
And we're talking to just about some of the modern things to do. Interestingly enough, they were about to open a new facility, a new Calatrava-designed facility called the Agora. And during the time we were there, they put up practice tennis courts.
In the
Science Museum, because there's weren't enough places for people to practice, and
we missed Nadal. He was there.
Yeah, well, we think he was. We didn't see him. I guess we could have pretended that did, but we really didn't.
And Roddick was there. We missed him too.
Yeah, and Andy Murray was also going to be there. And by now, of course, since it's a few days after we returned, we'll know who won that particular ATP tournament. I must confess, I don't have that information to hand.
I can tell you this: that they play much faster and stronger than we do.
but let's
okay. But we also learned how to make paella the correct way.
Yeah, we you have to. There are some things you have to do.
And this in is Valencia, one of them, because this is the birthplace of paella.
And so, of course, we had to go to a place right in the rice field section of Valencia, down in the very close to the sea.
We should mention that this is a big rice growing region, which is why you're going to eat rice, whether you know it or not, when you're in Valencia.
You'll sort of recognize it, and it'll be there as part of every meal if you want it to be. And it is, of course, the home of paella, the birthplace of paella, the only place, according to Rafael, who was our host at a restaurant called La Matendata, you can only make it with water, which is highly mineralized because it's groundwater from the Valencia region. Now, there are people who would contradict that, but...
It was a good story, and that paella was fabulous.
It's a good story, and Rafael is sticking to it, and not only that, but since Mario Batali and Gwyneth Paltrow and co went there...
Oh, yeah, they did too.
We figured that it must be the right place to find out paella, so, of course, we went to do that ourselves.
When you are in Valencia, you absolutely must have paella, which is where it was birthed, I guess we could say. And you must come to La Matendata, a restaurant where you could watch it being cooked outside, and you will have a real pro who we're going to talk to today make it for you. And, oh, is it good? We're going to be talking to Rafael. And tell us, Rafael, was paella born here or not?
Sí, la paella es un plato típica y genuinamente valenciano. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the paella is really typical for Valencia and traditional made, prepared here in Valencia.
And it is cooked outside on the grill.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a number of different ingredients you can have. What did we have? Which I think is really typical, and I think Bettina, who's doing our translation, has also said it was typical. What did we have in our paella?
Vamos a ver. En estas dos preguntas, lo normal es los paelleros dentro de los restaurantes están separados de lo que son las cocinas.
Mm-hmm. Where you prepare the paella, the so-called paellero, where you prepared, is always separated from the kitchen.
Es un espacio en donde se trabaja con leña, típicamente.
As you have to use wood, the so-called leña, you need this space outside.
Y en la segunda pregunta, los ingredientes, vamos a ver, no hay unas normas que nos marquen los ingredientes que tengan, pero los ingredientes básicos de la paella valenciana es la carne, tanto el pollo como el conejo, como el pato, las verduras, la bajoca, el garrofón y la tabella, después lleva caracoles, lleva tomate picado, no frito, sino frito, es tomate crudo picado. Es que oí el otro día un comentario en el que era tomate frito, no es frito el tomate. Se le puede añadir un poquito de ajo cortadito muy fino, unas láminas para que desaparezca después, todo eso se rehoga, junto con las hebras de azafrán, un poco de colorante para darle color al arroz y pimiento colorado, el pimentón. Pimentón nosotros utilizamos el de la Vera, que es un pimentón muy bueno. Todo eso es lo que componen los ingredientes básicos de la paella. Y después hay un montón de tipos de paellas que llámele usted como quiera, pero no le llame paella.
Rafael said the basic ingredients are that what the paella we had today, chicken, duck, and rabbit, and vegetables.
And snails.
As vegetables as the big white bean called garrafón. Big green beans. And also, if you like, some very cut in very small pieces garlic. And you also add some tomato, but fresh tomato. Because here, what Rafael said and what I learned too, that is wrong, we put here tomate frito. That is maybe translated fried tomato. And that is not true. You have to add really fresh tomato. And then Rafael said that those are the basic ingredients. But
with rice.
Of course, the rice from
is
here,
there a
from
particular
the rice,
kind of rice that you use?
Redondo.
No, perdón. Nosotros no. Estamos utilizando el arroz que hemos gastado toda la vida, que es el arroz normal, el que se hace en esta zona. Que es
pero
el,
redondo.
Sí, pero no es el bomba, ¿eh? Es, no. Okay. Es una varietal que se llama Senia. Puede ser el Senia, puede ser el Fonsa, puede ser una serie de varietales, pero no el bomba. Mm-hmm. Nosotros utilizamos el arroz normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the rice from here, of course, and it's
it's local rice.
It is local.
Well, here. I might mention this restaurant is actually in the middle of the rice fields, which is a sight to be seen. Anyhow, listeners, you need to get the whole experience. Come to this restaurant amid the rice fields, and then see how it's all done.
And the rice, the name of the rice they use is La Senia. I don't know how to translate it, I'm sorry, but it's called Senia.
Is it short or long?
It's a round, short one.
Okay.
No es largo, por supuesto.
No, es largo. Es el arroz que han comido ustedes, es el normal.
Yeah.
Es el arroz normal, el arroz que se utiliza por aquí, tanto en la parte de la ribera, o sea, de toda la ribera baja y toda la zona del Horta, que es esta, que es donde está toda la marjal, que es donde se están cultivando, donde se cultiva la mayoría de, vamos, las es la, digamos, las extensiones más grandes de arroz que hay en estos momentos en España, que es donde se cultiva esto.
Just told me that this part of Valencia, this part of Spain where we are here with the rice fields, is the main extension of where they cultivate rice. So there's no bigger one. Huh? This is really the biggest area where they cultivate rice in Spain.
Then you said it was brought in with the Arabs, huh?
Se cree que lo trajeron los árabes.
People do believe this, and he also, but... ¿Pero por qué lo dices que se cree? ¿Que no hay prueba?
Hay unas discusiones de que quiénes fueron los que trajeron el arroz. Lo bien cierto es que sabemos que el arroz entra en Europa por las incursiones de Alejandro el Magno en toda la zona de la India. Y es cuando viene...
¿India?
Viene, sí.
Sí, we don't know where the Moors would actually grow it in North
Porque
Africa.
Me preguntaron, cuando les dije que eran los moros, probablemente me dijeron, ¿pero dónde en África del Norte, probablemente, dónde tienen arrozales? Y no sabía qué decir, porque no lo sé, a decir
Mira,
la verdad.
El arroz, incluso hubo algún regente, algún rey español, creo que fue de los siglos XVI o XVII, que lo llegó a prohibir al cultivo, porque el arroz pues traía una serie de enfermedades al cultivarse en una zona lacustre. Todo esto traía zonas de paludismos y enfermedades y tal, y llegó a prohibir el plantación de arroz, hasta que bueno, las nuevas tecnologías por lo que han hecho es que todo eso no exista y que sí que hay un
Rafael, he just said what I told you before, that in the 16th century it was forbidden to cultivate rice. But of course that was not the answer for where do they cultivate rice in the north of Africa. So we don't know it.
Well,
but it's supposed to be thanks of the Moors that the Valencian cultivate the rice today.
And they invented paella, which has many varieties, but all of them good.
Okay, by the way, of course, Rafael also said we need to prepare a paella. We need azafrán. And then he said those are really the basic ingredients, but then there are thousands of possibilities to prepare a paella with whatever you like at the end. But this is of course, you can't call it paella anymore. Call it as you like, he said, but it's not a paella anymore.
Yeah, but you need to order paella valenciana.
Yes, okay. Paella valenciana.
Okay.
Yeah, you need to order it, of course, because you can't get into a restaurant and order a paella. You have to tell him that he has got time to prepare. It took about an hour.
You've got to call in advance
and
order this. When? How much notice does a diner have to request the paella?
Vamos, alrededor de una hora.
Una hora.
Okay, and we should actually say that there's a website, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is lamantendetta.com, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you will find the phone number on the website, and it's good to call, make your appointment, and then say what kind of paella you want.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all kinds of possibilities. Mm-hmm. Could you give us some ideas of possibilities?
Bueno, la paella, lo primero que tenemos que saber es que la paella es un componente cultural de unas, digamos, de unas capas bajas de trabajador del campo de marinero.
So first of all, to begin, the paella is of course a dish from the farmers working here. So there are different levels, if you like, now of la paella.
Entonces es los ingredientes que llevan este tipo de arroces, que también se les llaman paellas porque lo que es en realmente la paella es el recipiente donde se hace.
So he said, if you order another paella, now he will explain what kind of paellas are also, but he said, you still call it paella then, just because of the pan, that is el paellero, ¿no?
Está mal llamado decirle paellera.
Paellera.
No hay paelleras.
No.
Es la paella. Y el arroz se hace en la paella.
Okay, so there's another confusion, you can say, as I said before with the tomato, that people believe, even Valencian people believe, that la paella is made with tomate frito. No, it's with fresh tomato. There's also another confusion, even between the Valencian people, that we call it paellera, the recipient,
the pan.
That is not true, said Rafael. We call it paella. The pan, okay? It's the pan we call paella. Gracias, Rafael, porque no lo sabía.
No,
I said thank you because I also thought we call it paella.
Well, no, we watched him. And he's really a maestro cooking paella. I want to know, how did he become an expert in making paella? Mm-hmm. How did he come to this restaurant? And how did he get everything to come out each little grain of rice was separate.
Okay, now she...
Latina es difícil.
Ahora siempre...
Difícil.
Bien, eso es normal. Bueno, yo tuve un maestro, que fue mi suegro.
He had a...
Que era Manuel Baisauli.
Mm-hmm.
En Matanda. Matanda. Mm-hmm. Es el padre de María Dolores, mi mujer, y el abuelo de Elena.
Okay.
Y que era un gran maestro paellero, era un hombre de... No había estudiado cocina nunca.
Mm-hmm.
Era un hombre de aquí, del terreno, del campo.
So his teacher was his... Do you say father-in-law?
You can't
mother-in-law,
say.
Mother-in-law, his father-in-law. Yeah?
His wife's father.
Yes. He was called Matanda. That's why the restaurant is called
Mantedeta, which is diminutive.
That was his name. And he was a very humble man, if you like. He was not a cook. He was just a man who knew how to prepare la paella. And that was his gran maestro, no?
Who founded this restaurant?
No, esto no era un restaurante. Esto era una granja de toros.
Oh, okay, that is very interesting. That was not a restaurant before. That was a farm for bulls. A bull farm where they were,
I know.
The bulls.
And so how did it come to be a restaurant?
Y la familia decidimos que no íbamos a continuar con la ganadería y que íbamos a dedicarnos a otra cosa. Entonces...
The whole family decided, so that would belong to the family, and the whole family decided not to continue with the bulls, but to find another way of exploration, you say? Exploitation. No.
Another business, not exploitation.
Yeah. No, that is something different. Business. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Decidimos montar el restaurante y, claro, mi suegro era el que hacía los arroces.
Mm-hmm.
Y yo era el que llevaba la sala. Yo soy sommelier.
So his father-in-law, he prepared the rices, the dishes with rice, as he knew how to do it. And Rafael, he worked in the serving. He is originally a sommelier.
Oh, I see. Okay. A sommelier. Well.
So to conclude, why don't we ask what typically you would drink with paella?
Bueno, a la paella le van bien unos vinos que tengan un componente ácido, dado que es un plato muy graso, y entonces lo que ayuda es a limpiar, ¿eh? Mm-hmm. Las vías por donde pasa la paella quedan limpias por la acidez que pueda tener. Un vino rosado, vinos tintos jóvenes, mm-hmm. unos blancos jóvenes también, secos, mm-hmm. esto le va muy bien.
Okay, so what do you drink with a paella? You need something as the paella has... It's not very light. It's not a light dish. It's quite heavy in a way with oil. You need a wine that is... First, you can have a rosado, a rose.
Rosé.
And, of course, red, young red wines or young, very young white wines. So, this, do you say la acidez sour? It's sour? No, it's la acidez...
Acidic.
Yeah, you have to notice it because it helps you for the...
Digestion.
Yes. You know. Mm-hmm.
Well, we loved it. And and Raphael, we enjoyed watching you cook it and we enjoyed eating it. And I encourage everybody to come to La Matandeta in the rice fields just outside of the Valencia. If I got that one right. Thank you again. Muchas gracias.
Rafael,
thank you very much.
Que les ha gustado muchísimo la comida, la forma como preparas la paella, les ha gustado todo y están muy agradecidos.
Un componente importante de la paella es el agua.
Ah, the water is very important as an ingredient too.
Tiene que ser un agua con un alto componente mineral.
Ah, it must be a water with a lot of minerals.
Minerals?
Mm-hmm. Las aguas que no tienen componentes minerales muy 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 finas de componente no valen para hacer. Mm-hmm. Se hace, pero no sirven tampoco.
Entonces no puedes utilizar el agua de grifo.
Sí, el agua de grifo sí que la puedes utilizar. Lo que, vamos a ver, las aguas calcáreas, las aguas de zonas calcáreas, geodésicamente sea calcáreo, ¿no? O sea, es así. Las graníticas, por ejemplo, no hay arrastres minerales en las aguas, esas no valen. Sí, se hacen, pero no sale igual.
Entonces, las que llevan cal. If you have a water, chalky water, do you say it?
Chalky water. Right.
It's, that is very nice. For the paella, it's perfect. And if not, it's not as good.
Now, do you use bottled water?
No, she's
groundwater.
He is using the one from the grifo.
So, to sum it up, listeners, the only place where you can get the real, genuine paella valenciana and the best paella in the world is to come to the rice fields, where the water just happens to have all the right components too.
Okay, thank you, Bettina, and thank you, Rafael.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Yeah, and how do you say to the next time?
A ver si es en Pittsburgh haciendo una paella allí.
¿En dónde?
¿En no es Pittsburgh?
Ah, en Pittsburgh. Dice, the next time he would like to eat a paella in Pittsburgh.
Bueno, gracias. And with all that excitement, we're now going to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. I'm remiss for not reminding you to email us, blog with us, network with me on Facebook and tweet to me. All of this information of how you do this is on our website.
It's not information, it's just a push this button.
Push this button
exactly. And away you go.
And away you go.
Now, you by now, listeners, you probably know that On the Menu is sort of interested in counterpoint. So our next segment in Valencia is exactly that. A point and counterpoint between... a restaurant that started as a chiringuito, a beachside shack in the late 19th century, and getting permission from the King of Spain of the time to be able to open the building as a restaurant right on the harbor, which was greatly remodeled and improved for the America's Cup in 2007, along with a lot of other improvements that were made in Valencia at the time that that great event was expected. A restaurant called Pepica, which has been there, as I say, for a long time, serving a very traditional seafood and rice menu. And we had a chance to talk to the owner of the establishment, who wasn't exactly expecting to appear on the menu, but he did a great job of it. And then, at the other end of the scale, in the Institute of Valencia Art Moderne, the modern art exhibit in the city, a wonderfully stylish restaurant called Las Sucursal, where we had the opportunity to talk to a very shy chef and one of the two owners. So back-to-back, Pepica, Ristorante Pepica on the beach, and Las Sucursal in the IVAM.
We were a very famous place, and we're talking to the great grandson of the founder of this famous place. His name is Pepe Balaguer. And we have, as usual, our translator who's going to help us out with this interview. Bettina, this place is very famous. What is it called again?
La Pepica. The restaurant is called La Pepica.
And where did you found out where the name comes from?
Yes, the name comes, Mr. Balaguer told us the name comes from the lady, so-called Josefina. And Josefina, she founded La Pepica. And her name in Spanish, Josefina, you can call people with the name Josefina, you can call them Pepica. Uh-huh. So it's like a nickname, huh?
Oh, yeah.
And she founded La Pepica.
Great. And Pepe, tell us the story of La Pepica. This was a favorite place of Ernest Hemingway.
La historia de La Pepica es muy larga porque es de 1898. Son muchísimos años los que lleva aquí. Entonces podríamos estar contando horas y horas, pero lo vamos a resumir en que mis abuelos...
As the story is very long, he said, he will try to make it short. And he said it dates back to 1889, the foundation of La Pepica, and now he will give us more information.
Sí, mis abuelos fueron los fundadores. Empezaron en un barracón de playa sirviendo bocadillos para los trabajadores del puerto.
So they started with La Pepica right at the beach in a so-called era un chiringuito pues, ¿no?
Sí.
In a so-called chiringuito, a bar at the beach.
Chiringuito is a place on the beach, sort of like a little shack.
Yeah, and they served sandwiches, bocadillos, to the people working at the harbor.
It
was just for the workers.
En 1898 ya se instalaron aquí, donde estamos sentados, y ya hicieron el restaurante de madera.
So in 1898 they started to build this restaurant, and it was a wooden structure before.
Y en 1924 ya lo pidieron al rey Alfonso XIII para que lo hicieran en obra. Y fueron concesiones que fueron otorgadas a mi abuelo. Se pidieron como José Francisco Balaguer Márquez y 44 más.
En
1824.
So in 1824, they asked to the king, they had to ask the royal family for the concession, you say? Be able to build really this Alfonso XIII, Alfonso the 13th was at this time the king, to build this restaurant here.
Sí, y sobre Hemingway, era un hombre encantador, era como de la familia, porque venía muchas veces a comer o a cenar, y como era su carácter era muy abierto, iba por las mesas hablando y bebiendo sangría.
So Ernest Hemingway, Mr. Balaguer, he was a very nice person, very open person, going from table to talk to everybody. He used to come here all for dinner or for lunch, for lunch or for dinner, and he was always drinking sangria.
Ah, sangria. Huh? And did Pepe meet him?
Pepe, nunca te encontraste con él. Era...
Yo era muy, muy pequeño. Hemingway vino en el año 69.
Oh, I didn't know.
69. Sí que estuve con Hemingway.
Pepe, he was with him, but he was a little child, of course.
Sí, pero yo tengo ya 61.
No, this place is so much larger now. Who comes here?
Ahora viene muchísima gente, los reyes de España.
Ah, the royal family, for example.
Los príncipes. Muchos toreros.
Oh, also bullfighters, famous bullfighters.
Y mucha gente forastera a ver el retrato de Hemingway.
They've read the...
And also, of course, people who just want to see the photos of Hemingway, to see him also.
Nosotros hemos tenido la suerte de que Hemingway, en el libro de él, El verano peligroso, nos dedicó unas páginas. Eso es un honor muy grande, que un premio Nobel nombre a un restaurante como este.
It was in the novel. ¿Cómo se llamaba la novela?
El verano peligroso.
I translated El verano peligroso could be the, I don't know the translation in English, The Dangerous Summer, the novel The Dangerous Summer.
The Dangerous Summer.
Yes,
Death
that's
in
what
the
I
afternoon.
Said too.
Sí, fue
but
el,
I don't.
Verano sangriento.
The mort the now what?
Por la tarde. Bueno.
Okay, better.
And he dedicated in this novel several pages, and he said that is really like that was a wonderful heritage for them to be mentioned in a book from such a famous writer.
And it was good for business.
Of course. yeah. Que ha sido muy bueno para el negocio esto.
Sí, sí, muy bueno. Que viniera el Papa a Valencia también fue muy bueno.
Ah, but he said it was also very good for Valencia that the Pope came.
We saw that.
Sí, no. Pero
el Papa no
televisaron Valencia, la televisaron para todo el mundo. Entonces Valencia se dio a conocer como ciudad en el mundo.
He just said the importance of the Pope was of course that everybody was watching this at the television. And the whole world could get to know Valencia.
Here we are. And now I want to ask about the menu. What does one eat at this place?
Aquí en la Pepica, lo más importante es el arroz y los mariscos.
Mariscos. So the most important thing here are the rices and los mariscos, the seafood.
Hay un arroz que es el típico del restaurante. Que se le hizo a Sorolla en el año 20, una cosa así, que es el arroz pepica.
So they have a really special dish called el arroz pepica, the pepica rice.
Se le hizo a Sorolla, al pintor, el primero.
Pero ¿por qué lo hizo él? ¿Cómo fue?
Porque cuando él venía aquí a comer, comía el arroz de marisco y se lo pelaba.
It's rice.
Entonces la segunda vez ya se le dio pelado el marisco.
Rice with shellfish. Pepe, we would like to know your signature dish and also the artist that was responsible for creating it.
El plato más famoso de la Pepica es el arroz pepica, porque hace muchísimos años se le hizo la primera vez a Joaquín Sorolla, el pintor. Y de ahí nace la historia del arroz pepica.
So the most famous popular dish here in La Pepica is the pepica rice. And this dish ordered a very famous painter, Joaquín Sorolla. And Pepe will tell us now what he exactly ordered. Lo extraño.
La anécdota fue que cuando venía Joaquín Sorolla a comer, siempre se le hacía el arroz de marisco, o sea, el marisco pieza. Entonces él mandaba que se lo pelaran. Otra vez... Ya se le dio con el marisco pelado.
So when Joaquín Sorolla came to La Pepica, he asked for a rice, a shellfish rice, and he asked to take off all the
Yeah, the shell, the carapace.
The shells of the crabs and lobster and whatever.
And just use the crab meat.
And they did so, and the next time he came again, automatically the restaurant prepared for him the rice in that way, taking off all the shells.
Well, I mean, this place is just filled with nostalgia. It's vivacious still, and listeners, just come to the Papika and enjoy the beach, the food, and the charming Pepe Balaga.
Sí, Pepe.
Gracias, muchas gracias.
Gracias. Papika tiene el reto de hacer 10 toneladas de arroz al año.
Ah, there's a curious detail about La Papika. They prepare 10 tons, you say, toneladas, tons of rice in a year.
A ton.
Oh, ton.
That's a lot of rice.
Yeah.
It's Valencian rice.
Esperan, of course, yes.
Sí, sí, sí.
Muchas gracias, Pepe.
Thank you. Thank you.
And now we will eat.
Gracias, Pepe.
On the menu is at a very famous and, oh, it's an absolutely lovely restaurant called La Sucursal, which actually, we have a translator here to help us, Christina. Could you tell us what the name means?
Okay, the name, it comes from the first restaurant. First restaurant, it was called La Sal. It means La Salt. So when they decide to open a new restaurant, they do like the sucursal. ¿Cómo es? The branch? ¿Cómo es la palabra? Okay, a sucursal means
branch.
Exactly the office.
Yeah, a branch of or something, yeah.
Exactly. So it's like open a different office from the same restaurant. Sal from La Sucursal. So it comes from this joke of words. And
yeah, play on words. That's good. Now, the restaurant is beautifully designed, listeners. It's very contemporary and sleek, and it should be because it's inside the Instituto Valenciano, did I get that right, of modern art. So it's a contemporary art museum in Valencia. We're going to be talking to Chef Jorge Breton Prats. Hello, Chef.
Hello.
And we're going to talk a little about the food, which is, from my understanding, not only superior, but is a very interesting combination of innovation on tradition. So I'm looking forward to that. Tell us, Chef, you are native to Valencia. Huh?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. He's a little timido, a little shy, but we're going to move in here. Okay, we're going to talk then about, let's talk about the menu. We've given a little background on the restaurant itself. Tell us, we're going to do a tasting menu. I have this menu here. Can you talk a little bit about these different dishes? Can you explain some dishes?
Bueno, la idea de tener dos menús, ¿no? Un menú innovación con más técnica, con un poco más de creatividad, y otro menú llamado tradición con platos que recuerdan más la cocina tradicional.
Okay, he's saying, as we said, he does the innovation menu and he does the traditional menu. And we are going to do a tasting menu of the innovation menu, which is experimental Spanish cuisine. Play on the traditional foods.
Yeah, the main idea on the traditional menu is just to combine the new techniques of cuisine, the new combination of textures and flavors. Is that we have two different menus. In the first one, it's very innovative with the techniques, textures, flavors, and with the traditional, the only thing that we pretend is just to remind our traditional flavors. We're trying to present a bit more contemporary, but we just remind the traditional flavors.
So let's take the first dish, a tartufo.
Yeah.
El tartufo, bueno, la idea es un juego, ¿no? Entre el foie y el cacao, el chocolate, ¿no? Un juego entre dulce, salado y amargos.
Okay, with the tartufo, it's a play with the foie gras. With the bitter of the chocolate and the salt of the corn. It's a play of.
Okay, and then we're moving on to a roasted tomato infusion, which is
la idea es un poco el recuerdo de un gazpacho, ¿no? De una infusión de tomates, en este caso asados, para que el sabor sea más profundo. Y bueno, que pues lo acompañamos con producto de la zona, con la gamba de Denia y bueno, unos artificios técnicos como es el frappe de pepino y unas gelatinas de tomate asado.
Well, the main idea is to remind our traditional Andalusian gazpacho, no? But we use the one of the best products of this area. It's the brown from Denia and the technique of the cucumber frappe. It's with this roasted tomatoes infusion. We roasted the tomatoes to have a more, what's it, a profundo whole flavor, no more.
And next is, now that's a funny name, galley rice. With artichokes and white turnip impregnated in fennel.
La idea era, bueno, transportar un plato muy típico de la zona, ¿no? El arroz, pero dándole unos puntos, primero unos puntos aromáticos con el hinojo, que son muy típicos de esta zona, poniéndolo casi como una aromaterapia, y después jugando con la galera, que, bueno, es un producto que nos da una textura muy similar a lo que sería una grasa en el arroz, y bueno, acompañándolo con el propio hinojo, con algo de nabo blanco y alcachofas confitadas.
Yes, the idea is using products from this area. We have the rice, it's very typical here.
It grows here, yes.
We
see the rice fields.
We take the fennel, it's very used product here, and we do it like aromatherapy. So we put some aroms on this dish. So we combine the rice with the fennel, and the galley. It's from the family from browns, no? With this kind of brown, with the galley, we obtain like a fat, no? Como una grasa, like carpaccio.
Okay, carpaccio.
Como has dicho, grasa, es como una fat, the texture of like fat, but it's from the family of the browns, and with small cubes of artichoke or the idea is,
sí, un poco la idea de la zona mediterránea, ¿no?
Yeah, the idea is just Mediterranean area.
Okay. Chef, do you cook more with your mind or your soul?
Sí, la verdad es que, bueno, es una forma, intentamos transmitir en los platos lo que pensamos, lo que sentimos y lo que conocemos, ¿no? Y evidentemente es esta zona que es la que nosotros más conocemos, más nos gusta y más apreciamos.
Yes, that they try is with they think, which I to apply in the dishes, no? And just from this area is that they know that the knowledge that they have, no? Dishes from this area, the idea, and we try to put on the dishes.
How hard is it to get into this, to get a reservación aquí? To get a reservation here? Is it difficult?
It's difficult.
Yes? No?
It depends. No, not really.
And restaurant has a website?
Yes, we have it.
Which is?
It's web.restaurantlasucursal.com.
Let me spell it out for you here.
Yeah.
Okay, it's www.restaurante. I'm not doing very well here. LASUCURSAL. That's it. .com, and it's in what part of town?
It's in the old town in the periphery of the Barrio del Carmen.
Uh-huh.
It's Guillem de Castro.
Let's have one more dish from the menu, Chef. I mean, which one are you really interested in? This fish dish looks really very interesting, but so does the ox sirloin. Pick one of them and talk.
Bueno, personalmente, el plato del taco de buey, ¿no? Es uno de los platos que más me gusta, ¿no? Por la idea de la similitud entre la carne que nosotros cocinamos, que está a baja temperatura, y una carne hecha a la brasa, ¿no? Con los aromas ahumados, con los toques de madera.
Well, the dish that he prefers is the ox sirloin, ¿no? Well, we cook this meat in low temperature, and we obtain the flavors of the wood, of the smoked flavors from the barbecue, but we didn't use it, not really. So it's what he likes, this dish. You can try and you'll see. It's cooked in low temperature. We keep all the flavors, but the finish is like barbecue, but not.
Barbecue, but it's not.
I think that we ought to mention that what I read, and you can say if this is true or not, that when you do rice, you don't do it so much as a paella, where every kernel is individually cooked and rather dry, separated, but as a, sort of a more risotto-like texture, a softer, moister rice. Is that true?
We don't used to do. You mean we do more similar like risotto than paella?
Yeah.
Is that...
Bueno, si buscamos que la idea del arroz sea un poco más meloso, ¿no? Que huimos un poco del típico tópico del arroz seco, del concepto de paella, ¿no? Cocinamos arroces, no paellas. Esa es nuestra intención.
We do it rices, not paellas. We don't just to do a dry rices. We prefer to do it more creamy rices, no?
Now, the restaurant is owned, actually, by a sister and a brother, co-owners. The brother is also a chef, Javier Andres. And we were hoping he'd stop by to say hello, but he's very busy in the dining room. And his sister is Christina. Well, we actually have the privilege. We snagged the owner, Javier Andres, and he's going to say a few words to us about the restaurant. Talk to us. We have to.
No, gracias.
I was going to say, diga.
Buenas tardes. El restaurante La Sucursal, estamos situados en Valencia, en el Museo de Arte Moderno, de los más importantes de España. Y yo creo que pueden pasar aquí con nosotros una jornada divertida, atractiva, y disfrutar de la cocina y el arte.
Well, we're excited about this.
yes, Javier Andres, say we are in the IBAM, in the Institute Valencian of Modern Art, and he think you can try to have an enjoyed day with us, with the gastronomy and art.
Is Andres a common name? We know Jose Andres, who actually is from Barcelona, who is in Washington, D.C. now, who's a disciple of Ferran Adrià. Does he know him?
Yes, it's a common name.
Well, thank you so much for your hospitality. We are going to enjoy it.
Vale, muchas gracias por la hospitalidad que van a disfrutar. Enjoy your meal.
And now it's time to take another break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Here we are again, and we're now going to take a little run into the country to a vineyard called Los Frailes, which I think that's how you pronounce it, but whatever it means, the monks.
And it's a property that's been making wine since the 15th century or thereabouts.
Yes, and another case of where the father decided to actually make it into an expanding business.
Just 15 years ago.
Yes.
Just in case you're wondering, we did, of course, as On the Menu is wont to do, go looking for wine. And
right.
We discovered wine at this wonderful winery called Los Frailes, the principal grape of the Valencia DOC, or DOG, I forget which they call it in Spain. He's rather unusual in American terms and really in French terms as well, the grape, principal grape being Mourvèdre. They call it something different.
They called it the same thing as that restaurant we didn't get to.
Yeah, they call it Monastrell in the Valencia region.
And
in
that was
Spain
a restaurant
generally.
We wanted to go.
But here is a family that's been running the winery as a country house for a long, long time, a couple of centuries. Then 15 years ago decided that it should get into the business. Los Frailes is a wine label you'll find around the country and around the world because they export about 80% of the wine that they make. And we had the opportunity not only to enjoy some there, but take some with us. And, in fact, we finished our last bottle on the way home.
Right.
In another country altogether. And it was just as much fun. And it took us back to the wonderful visit that we had with Maria Velasquez at Los Frailes Vineyard, just about 60 kilometers outside of Valencia, up in the hills. is amazing to be 80 kilometers only from Valencia and to be in a country where the only sound apart from Maria's cell phone and the equipment which is working in the vineyard is Peter and Maria from the family which owns a winery called Casa Los Frailes, which I'm sure I pronounced incorrectly.
And the family name is Belaf.
you did that very nicely.
Yes.
This is a fascinating property with roots going back to 15th and 16th century Spain. Fast forward to 15 years ago when it was begun to be developed as a commercial vineyard. Maria, tell us a story.
Okay, so the story of Bodega Los Frailes is a family business that everything started in the 18th century, in the 1771, when at that time the property, because this is an estate, the estate, it will belong to the Jesuits. The Jesuits is like...
Jesuits, right. Got it.
The Jesuits, belong to the Jesuits. And they were very powerful at that time in Spain. They had a lot of properties, and they have this, that it was a winery, so they were producing wine in this estate. And the king of Spain, that it was Charles III, decided to expel them, to confiscate all their goods, because the king of Spain need money to go to the war with Europe and everything.
But let's fast forward just a few centuries to the 20th century and something that happened 15 years ago.
Oh, then, after this, okay, when then my family bought it.
Could I just jump back? When they expelled the Jesuits, property went up for auction, and the Velasquez family bought it then. Okay, now we'll fast forward to 15 years ago.
Exactly. Then after my family bought it, exactly. Then 50 years ago, my father decided, because this was like a summer house. We had the property, but really we were not, the wine was produced, but we were not working for the wine. 15 years ago, my father decided to retire and then to do the investment and then to start to produce wine. And at that time, we decided to do everything into organic production. So all the domain, the 130 hectares, were under organic.
But this is a winery with roots in history, because some of the vines are at least 50 years old already.
Exactly.
And a grape variety you call
Monastrell,
which the rest of the world knows better as Mourvèdre.
Exactly.
A very deep, full-bodied red wine grape.
Mm-hmm.
You use here in a variety of different ways, but the central characteristic of all your wines is some Monastrell.
Exactly. In all our range of wines, we have always the Monastrell, because it's the typical one from here. But the grapes are coming from that age. I mean, when the Jesuits were here, they will have also the grapes. So now the oldest ones that we have is 55 years old. The oldest Monastrell vines are 55 years old, and they are on bush, rails.
It's really very interesting. So you're blending with different grapes. You're blending different blocks and different barrel types. But the objective is to make a wine with a unique expression.
Exactly. It's to make a wine of our terroir. So it's just to try to extract the best of our terroir, knowing our terroir and the characteristics and everything. So we have many different terroirs in all the state. We have like 3 or 4 types of terroirs. So we try to combine all of them and to have the most full expression wine.
One of the interesting things, listeners, for those of you who are wine lovers who go around the globe, you probably realize, like I do and like Anne does, that it seems that propinquity to limestone is a characteristic of areas which have fine terroir and make interesting wines. Mm-hmm. And here is no exception.
Yes, exactly. Here our best terroir is on the top of the mountain. We are at 750 square meters over the sea level, and the terroir is with limestones, of course, sandy and limestones. And the conditions are very extreme, because here there is no rain, it's dry agriculture, the yields are very low, like less than 2,000 kilos per hectare, so really very low. It's less than 1 kilo per...
But this is not just a... Listeners, this is not just a simple country story about a vanity estate for making wine. This is a winery which exports, I think, Maria, you said 80% of the wine you make is sold outside of Spain.
Mm-hmm.
So you must be doing something pretty special.
Yes.
What do you think it is?
I think we don't do anything, really. I think it's our land who is giving us something special, is the grape. At the end, in the winery, we don't do anything. We just do as much as natural we can do, so we don't add any product. So really here, the virtue or the excellence of the wines is because of the grapes. Grapes and the terroir and the climate, everything together, I mean.
So I'm really tasting a piece of Spain.
Exactly.
A very unique piece of Spain when I get these wines.
Exactly. Very unique climate, very unique terroir. So all together is what it makes the wine. And it's mainly the grape.
Now, you have one, we drank a number of different styles of monastery, different ages today of wines. Can you quickly go through those for us?
I mean, how many different labels do you have here?
Okay, our range of wines is, they are like six wines. We have an entry level, that they are very fresh, young wines, fruity, okay, not very complex wines for everyday drinking or for aperitif or when you arrive from work and then you want a glass of wine, chili, whatever. That is our entry level. That we have also a rosé, but the rosé is only for summertime. And then after this entry level, you jump in the top, in the high, in more concentration. And then you have Biologia, Trilogia, that they are very much powerful wines with much higher concentration, much more structure, and depends on the taste. Biologia is more rustic, let's say Trilogia is more elegant. And then after this, we have a sweet wine that is made of Monastrell as well. It's the latest of the harvest. It's harvested in November, at the end of November. And it's natural made. Like, it's not, we don't add any sugar.
Okay, so is the botrytis in the process, or is it just simply late ripening?
No, there is no, here is not like in Sauternes.
You're simply harvesting a very, very ripe grape.
Exactly, it's very, very ripe grape. We don't have botrytis here. Noble, it's more, it's not noble.
It's probably too dry.
Exactly, it's too dry for there. Then, no, they are, it's the latest harvest, they are very mature, the sugar concentration in the grape is very, very high, so yes, they cannot work because the sugar is very high in the grapes, so the fermentation stops automatically, and oh, then wow. The sugar still is 17, 18, you know?
Now, for general information, let me just spell out, the website is www.bodegaslosfrailes.com.
Which means monks.
Exactly.
I didn't realize that was the father's, sure. But and the wine is widely available throughout Europe and also in the United States, I believe.
Exactly. Yes.
Now, can people find that out by going to the website, Maria?
Where is the wine exactly?
Where
in
is the wine available? Or?
Yeah. What, can they go to the website and find out how they can get this? No.
No.
We need to do that.
Exactly, we need to do that.
But believe me, listeners, you should look for this Los Frailes. You will recognize it with a rather delightful F on some of the labels.
It's easy to recognize.
The Trilogia has threes all over it. Uh-huh. That's a surprise.
Yeah, because that's really
And after three is the dessert wine. Exactly. It's been a fascinating adventure. We're sadly late for lunch. We're crushing Maria up against the later point. Yeah. Because we've been having such fun here on a beautiful day.
Yeah, and I just want to say that we're in this tasting room, and there are three sides that are windows, and the countryside is gorgeous as far as the eye can see.
Thank you.
So you have something good to work with making your wine. It's good earth.
Does it make you happy to be here?
Yes.
I think so. Papa had a really good idea.
Yes, it's difficult because the wine industry is complicated, but we are very happy.
Yeah, he was going to join us today, but unfortunately he's stuck as a result of an air travel departure problem in Switzerland, so he is not here today. But I'm sure Maria will give our very best wishes and our thanks, and it's been a delight to visit you here today, Maria. Do you have a last word for our listeners?
No, only thank you very much for the visit. It was very nice.
You can also say bye, Los Frailes, if you like.
Yes, I would like to say I will update the website.
Please.
I will update the website and I will put where you can find the wine.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your visit.
I feel sad. I feel sad because that's the end of our report on our wonderful Valencia trip. But we've enjoyed sharing our experiences with you for the last 2 weeks. And I have to give you one final piece of fascinating information. As you know, we're always on the lookout for new and interesting things on menus. So after we visited the winery, we went to the little nearby town.
Oh, right, we
had lunch at a real nice, sitting in the sunshine, drinking wine and enjoying some wonderful local food. And for the first time ever, looking at the menu, there were two dishes of beef. And both were listed as... I can't remember the word, but the meat came from cows, not bulls. Most unusual, and we asked the owner of Julio's restaurant why that was, and he said because the meat from the cow is so much tastier and tenderer than the meat from the bull. And the only way that I can think of for you to try that, bro, is to go to some place like Julio's and try it, because I don't think that that's what you get here in these United States. But it just goes to show you that you just can just keep on learning. And if you follow in our footsteps, you'll be sure to have a good time And we hope you'll join us same time, same place next week, where we'll be off somewhere else, I'm sure. And until now, from now until then, what do we say usually?
Bye-bye.